from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll talk with artist Douglas David about his new show in Fort Wayne.
I'll chat with author Sherry Wood Emmons about her novel, The Sometimes Daughter.
And I'll get a preview of Dance Kaleidoscope's Cole Porter performance. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. You probably saw Douglas David in his contemporary impressionist paintings at the Broad Ripple Art Fair just a few weeks ago. David is an art fair circuit regular, but this June his work will be shown at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. Travis DiNicola spoke with him about the show.
Douglas, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It was great to see you out at the Broad Ripple Art Fair a little bit ago. That was a lot of fun, as always. That's, I was thinking a lot of people... know your work from being at Broad Ripple or Penrod or the State Fair, but this is terrific that you've got a chance to have a second museum show in the state of Indiana. The first one was a little while back at the Richmond Art Museum, and now you're right at Fort Wayne.
Yes, I'm going to Fort Wayne in June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited about it. It's a big honor to be invited and to... show. That's actually the second largest city in the state, so I'm kind of jazzed by it.
That's a pretty big honor to be, you know, any museum for a living artist and a one man show. I mean, this is great. I'm very happy for you for that.
Thank you.
Your work is I find it. I mean, it's so accessible. It's beautiful work. It's impressionistic, but it's very contemporary. You know, the one thing that I wanted to really talk with a little bit about you today, and we'll talk about the specific show in a minute at Fort Wayne. But I'm curious a bit, Douglas, because I've never really asked you about your process in terms of, you know, so much of your work is set on these beautiful Indiana fields or other fields, or
right,
whether it's landscapes or with some cows in there and beautiful flowers. You know, do you just spend a ton of time outside?
You know, more and more. I mean, I think that it's, you can't paint that unless you're experiencing it. You can't, mm-hmm, do it. You really can't fake it unless you're out there and relaxed and calm. And
what's that like for you? I mean, do you take a small canvas and paints out and one of those easels to set up in a field and do sketches of it?
I do. In plein air.
And a big hat.
Yeah, I do. I have a big hat, especially a big sun hat now. But mm-hmm, no, I do. When I go out, you kind of have to get in a groove and I paint like a series. So sometimes in an evening I'll paint, two or three, and they're not huge. They're little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's kind of you kind of have to get relaxed and then just kind of let it happen.
Is there a favorite place you like to go?
Oh, wow. No, that's always changing. You know, I love rural. I've spent a lot of time in Vermont in the summer, spent a lot of time in Michigan, and I love mm-hmm Indiana. So,
mm-hmm,
I think I just love that. You know, you have to kind of, when you're painting, you either have to get out in a pasture or a field, or you have to get off the road just so you're safe.
Sure.
But, it's just fun to drop the tailgate and just set the easel up and paint. And sometimes some friends and I get together and we'll have a little wine and cheese. It's a mm-hmm wonderful evening.
Nice. Now, do you go, out with a specific place in mind, or do you let yourself kind of drive and see where it takes you?
Well, I'm trying to let myself, I'm pretty driven, so to speak. I've been in corporate America and been in marketing, advertising, and all those things, since my time at art school. But, I'm getting better at just letting it happen. But usually what happens is I've got kind of a concentrated direction of study. Like if I'm doing, I've been doing a lot of water lately, a lot of seascape, a lot mm-hmm of Indiana lakes and Michigan lakes. And so what happens is there's that reflection, there's that sunrise, sunset, which direction's the light. There's a lot more to it than just painting a pretty painting. There's a lot of study that goes into it. So I kind of, a lot of times I repeat, I go back to the same spot several times to get
You know, I've noticed that. I mean, in terms of the subject matter of some of your finished paintings, that it seems as though, you know, sort of different, whether it's times of day, different lighting, or even seasons. But
right. Well, I find, and especially when I teach, I find that, you know, you can't just off the cuff paint a great painting a lot of times. Sometimes it happens, but more times than not, you have to, you know, you have to really push yourself to develop. The repetition gets you somewhere. I mean, when I say repetition, it's not that you're painting the same painting over and over again, but you've gotten familiar with the size of the tree, the distance from the tree to the edge of the pond.
Sure.
You know, and you start to be able to depict that better. So I say, you know, really, when I'm talking to students, repeat your locations. It's not so much finding the perfect location, it's creating the perfect painting.
And learning from it each time you keep painting.
Each time. It's just like, well, you know, when I'm teaching, a lot of times I'll say, what do skaters do? They skate. What do runners do? They run. What do, you know, I do these analogies with athletics because, you know, it's just the same discipline. How are you going to get to be a great painter? You can't just set up your easel and pull off a masterpiece, because Monet and those guys didn't do it that way either. They did a lot of hard study and a lot of, you know, when Monet...
Practice, and it's, I mean, skill comes from practice.
Exactly.
It's not like you just wake up with it one day.
Well, no, you just, you know, you. I think we're all blessed with different things, but I think it's how you develop it and how you evolve it. I mean, like, for instance, the Monet example is like, remember when he did the haystacks? And remember when he did the cathedral? You know, he did it in all times of day. I mean, that's a great lesson when I'm teaching. They people get it. They go, oh, he did, didn't he? You know, he didn't just do one of them, and it's in the Chicago Art Institute.
Right.
You know, they're all over the world, and there's like a series.
Yeah, over and over, the constant exploration.
So, you know, so once in a while I'll stop, we'll paint it, and it'll be fabulous. Other times I'm really devoted, and I'll be back to a spot a lot of times.
Now, the show that is at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, which opens on June 9th and runs through August 12th, is titled... Paints Town and Country. Douglas David paints town and country.
Yes.
And I know that you're still working out exactly what paintings are in there, but the town part, you've also been doing some, in addition to the landscape, some interesting sort of like more urban building paintings I've seen of late. Those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm calling those my cityscapes.
Cityscapes, okay.
So what happened was I got a Lilly Endowment grant a few years ago, and I went to London. I did it London, Amsterdam, Paris. And I came back and I did 120 little cityscapes, and it was about figure, and it was the figure on the street corner and the figure, you know, in a museum. And it was really, the whole grant was to study figure in Europe based on my palette. So what happened then when I got back, all of a sudden I realized, oh, that'd be fun to do in Chicago, and that'd be fun to do, you know, some little Indianapolis. So what I'm doing is I'm kind of developing the cityscapes, and so there will be a few of those in Fort Wayne.
Okay. Now, again, we're still finalizing exactly which paintings, but you're kind of going through an interesting process, I think, here, because you're actually working with a curator for this exhibit, which is different from, I mean, usually you just sort of, you know, pick the paintings that you show at, you know, whether it's at an art fair or other exhibitions. And, so how's that going for you?
Well, you know, it's really fun. It's interesting. You know, it's kind of... you know, I love to have control. I love to be able to pull together what I like, and that's kind of the, you know, that's a luxury I've had. You know, even like my State Fair show last year, you know, I created it, and we, you know, we put it together. Nora was writing, and it turned out really well. But what's interesting about...
Nora Spitznagel.
Yes, yep. Nora's a great friend, and always does a great job on her copy and her writing. But I'm working with... Sarah Aubrey, who's the curator at Fort Wayne.
Okay.
And so we've selected my selections, and then she's going to go through, and we're going to have what she's calling a conversation about them. So I can't really tell you. It's going to be a surprise. So, but it's fun. It's fun. We're going to have, you know, we'll have floral, and we'll have, you know, landscape and seascape, and I'm sure we'll get a cow or two in there, because everyone loves those cows.
Everyone loves the cows.
You know? And then these little cityscapes. I don't think a lot, but a few, you know, kind of sprinkled in. And, you know, they're little. Those cityscapes are those little three by fives.
Now, I have to say, I have not been to the Fort Wayne Museum of Art, so this sounds like a great opportunity to go explore it. What's the space like where you're going to be showing?
It's a great space. It's a modern building. Now, actually, they expanded and they doubled the size, and it opened in 10. So the Contemporary Regional Arts Gallery, I believe, is the gallery that I'm in. It's kind of between the two. So it's on the it's the extension of the original space, which was, I think, in the 70s it was built. It's still a nice, nice building. And then this new, the new expansion's tremendous, and they've got an incredible permanent collection. Like, where my space is going to be. You go through a door, and right through the door are incredible, like a George Ennis, some great Indiana artists. I mean, this, you know, I'm going to be surrounded by
some good company.
Yes, yes.
Very good. And this is terrific, I think, that that the Fort Wayne Museum of Art is featuring a living Indiana artist and trying to sort of expand their regional reach as well.
Yep, they're good. You know what? They have some great programming there. Their website, you know, kind of shows upcoming, and you can actually look back at past shows. And, you know, here again, I'm just very excited about it, and I'm very honored to be invited.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
That, yeah, absolutely great for you. Now, what plans do you have for the summer? Going off anywhere to do some more painting?
Well, you know, I mean, it's show season, so to speak. You know, I'm picked up a few shows in Chicago. I'm actually doing some fun, the burbs. I think I'm in Hinsdale and Evanston and, you know, Glen Ellen, some of those little burbs. That's fun. But I am going to venture up to Michigan, do a little painting in the, you know, in the height of July. And then back in here, I'm actually planning to be doing some Indiana stuff fall again, so that'll be fun, you know.
Very good.
Yeah, so I'm around.
Okay, I look forward to seeing the show at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. Douglas David paints town and country, but also looking forward to see what you keep coming up with. Douglas, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Travis. Good to see you.
Travis DiNicola with painter Douglas David. His show at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art opens June 9th and runs through August. Visit douglasdavid.com for more information. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Sherry Wood Emmons wants to tell her fictional characters what to do, but they won't cooperate. The Indianapolis East Sider came to our studios to tell Sharon Gamble about her writing process, how she incorporates autobiography, and what she does when the people in her novel won't cooperate. She began by reading the first few paragraphs of her new novel, The Sometimes Daughter.
I was born at Woodstock. At 3:02 on the morning of Monday, August 18, 1969, I made my squalling appearance in a tent pitched on a muddy field at Max Yasger's farm in rural Bethel, New York. My mother, blissfully stoned, put me to her breast and nursed me, while Crosby, Stills, and Nash opened their now famous set with Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And so she named me Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, even though my father told her my dark blue eyes would probably turn to brown like his. Most babies are born with blue eyes, he said, but usually they turn brown within a few days. She would not be swayed. Sweet Judy Blue Eyes Webster is the name on my birth certificate. Mother, Cassie Skylark Webster. She changed her name from Cassandra Elaine when she married my dad. Father, Kirk Allen Webster. He did not change his name, despite my mother's pleading. I have a grainy Polaroid photo to record the event of my birth. My mother's blonde hair hangs limp around her pale face. Her green eyes are heavy-lidded and tired. She looks terrible. I guess that's what 3 days with no baths and then birthing a baby will do to a woman. My father, wearing a ridiculous dashiki and sporting a scraggly beard, sits beside her on the ground, his arms wrapped around her tiny figure. I am wrapped in a Viet Cong flag. My fleetingly blue eyes stare suspiciously at the camera. A few hours later, Mama took me to the pond to baptize me. My father trailed behind her, fairly certain that dunking a newborn in a cow pond was not a good idea, but unable to stop the force of nature that was his wife. Hundreds of people cheered as my parents waded into the muddy water, then submerged me briefly in the shocking cold. Their yells drowned out my screams. My mother cried and then passed out.
I'm sitting here trying not to laugh at the the line about the cow pond not being such a great idea for a newborn. You are too young to have been born at Woodstock, but how did you get this idea? Where did this novel come from?
My husband and I were watching a documentary about Woodstock, Woodstock 3 Days of Peace and Love. And there were actually two or three babies born at Woodstock. And I thought, what would that be like to have Woodstock as your starting point? And what would that say about who your parents were? And so I started with the line, I was born at Woodstock, and just let it go where it went.
So you must know some people who are of an age to, maybe they went to Woodstock or maybe they didn't, but they just wished they had or they read about it.
My sister Anita wanted to go to Woodstock very much and didn't.
I'm a little too young myself, but I know I have some older relatives who just, boy, their lives would have been so different. They're convinced if they'd been able to convince their parents to let them go to Woodstock.
Yes.
It's just one of those before and after kind of
events
in our culture.
It is an iconic event.
Yeah.
Things changed at Woodstock.
They did dramatically. I went to a workshop in upstate New York a few years ago, and the closest civilization, so to speak, was Woodstock. It was about 45 minutes away from where the workshop was, but it's where you had to go to get cell phone service. So a couple of times in the week, people piled into a car and went over to Woodstock to check their phone messages. And, you know, I don't know what I expected to see. It's a quaint little village.
A farm town.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what made Woodstock what it was were the people who were there during that festival.
Right, and the amazing thing is how many people came and how few problems there were.
Mm-hmm.
It rained, people got wet. They had easily three times, four times as many people as they had planned for, and it just all went well.
People worked together.
People worked together.
You've just described the mindset of Cassie, the mama of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, I think. But there's the character of Cassie has a dark side as well.
Some readers have found her very unlikable.
Really?
I personally love Cassie.
She's
frail. Means well.
Yeah.
She's damaged.
Mm-hmm.
She has had bad experiences in her past, and she makes foolish choices. But I never doubt that she loves Judy and wants the best for her.
Mm-hmm.
She just doesn't always know how to go about doing that.
She's looking for a mentor or a savior or a guru.
Yes.
Maybe she might have used all those words at different points in her life, and she keeps kind of wandering off with one or another people of that description.
She never really left Woodstock.
Yeah.
She never quite grew up. And I think she's always looking for something outside of herself to complete herself. And so she never finds it.
Her husband may have started with kind of an extra crunchy granola sensibility. Oh, not to cast a wide stereotype here, but he is forced to mature because he ends up and again, you have to be of a certain age to remember when this was shocking. He ends up with custody of his daughter. That was
unusual in the
1960s
and 70s. Yes. He is really, I think, an ideal kind of dad. He loves his daughter. He puts her needs ahead of his own. He loves Cassie and gets hurt by her again and again until he finally gets beyond it. But he is, I think, the dad everybody should have.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah.
Right? Meanwhile, Judy does what children who have circumstances that are not quote-unquote normal do, right? She kind of invents a life.
She makes up stories about where her mother really is. And she makes up stories even to herself about how her mother feels and why her mother does the things that she does. And she's very conscious of the fact that she's growing up in the early 70s, raised by a single father, and divorce was not so common then. And not to have a mother was extremely rare. She had surrogate mothers. Her best friend's mother mothered her, her grandmother mothered her, and eventually her stepmother becomes a real mother to her. But it takes a while for her to realize that.
And meanwhile, while she has this great advantage of having a best friend whose mother kind of pulls her in and gives her some of the love and care she needs, But Judy also reaches out and makes friends with some other girls who are not accepted, including an African-American girl.
Yes, they form a little sisterhood of misfits. And that, I think, if you're a child and you're vulnerable, it's often your friends who make the difference for you.
Absolutely. There's some very real... Now, it's not an autobiographical novel, but do I understand that you did grow up on the East Side in the Irvington area?
I was born and raised in Irvington and went to IPS schools and graduated from Howe High School and hung out at Gringo's Taco House and was a Hornet Honey.
I bookmarked that page because I missed that place.
I did too.
I came to Indianapolis just in time for junior high and high school, and I kept thinking, oh, I remember that. But back to talking about the little band of misfits, there's something very particular about Irvington in that at the time of this novel, and for many years later, in fact, it was the world headquarters of the Disciples of Christ Church.
Yes, indeed.
And therefore, there were lots of, I don't know about you, but I went to school with a lot of PKs,
preacher's
kids.
I am a PK.
There you go.
My father worked at the missions building.
Yeah, and lots of my friends had been with their minister mother or father, or I had my best friend's mother and father were both ministers, and they had traveled. They had taken the mission to any number of places. And so, there were anti-war protests in and around School 57 and Howe High School.
Yes.
And there was also this kind of carryover into a later generation of that kind of Woodstock sensibility, of that kind of let's embrace diversity, let's be peaceful, even at a time when maybe the larger culture of Indianapolis wasn't feeling that way.
Yeah, Irvington was and still is a very special place. I grew up on Butler Avenue, and the house next door to us was home to six conscientious objectors who were doing their alternative service at the missions building.
Cool.
And my father, although he was career Army Reserve, counseled COs during the Vietnam War.
Oh.
Irvington was a nice little bubble of neighborhood and ice cream socials and people watching out for each other in a way that I don't think a lot of communities are.
Do you outline when you write, or did you just start with the first sentence and then just see what happened each day?
I just started with the first. I am not good at plotting ahead of time. Sometimes Daughter is actually my second book.
Mm-hmm.
My first book, Prayers and Lies, is also partly set in Irvington and partly in rural Appalachia. And I'm currently finishing up my third book, which is set in Indiana, although not in Indianapolis.
Do you have a title for that yet?
Yes, it's called The Weight of Small Things, and it will be released next April.
Oh, great.
But I never know ahead of time what's going to happen until it happens. I don't know how to outline and make it work. I have tried, and it just doesn't work for me. I sit down, and whatever comes is what comes.
You're character-driven. The characters knock on your door
and
say,
"Here I am." Inhabit my life. Especially toward the end when I'm in crunch mode and I'm under deadline and I have to get things done. I dream them. I hear their conversations in my head. When I wrote the first book, I wrote the second half of it in a week.
Wow.
And the story was coming so fast, I was typing in shorthand.
Wow.
I couldn't keep up. It doesn't always happen like that. Some days you just have to sit and grind it out. But when they are coming, they come quickly and they encompass my life.
And they don't always come at convenient times?
No, they don't. I get up in the middle of the night sometimes and make notes or go downstairs and write.
What's your husband do for a living? Does he understand this?
My husband is wonderful. My husband works for the Mary Rigg Neighborhood Center.
Mm-hmm.
He's running the Youth Employment Services Program. And he is my biggest fan and supporter.
And he's in a creative field himself, so he
is.
Gets this.
He
yeah.
is.
How do you put boundaries between yourself and your characters, or do you? Do you ever start writing a character and think, oh, no, that's what I would do, that's not what Judy would do or Cassie would do?
I have tried, the first book especially, I had an idea of what was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and it would not go there. The story
really?
Would not go there. The people in the book were going to do what they were going to do. And it took me a while to release that and just let them have their own voice. And once they did, it got a lot easier. But that's why I don't outline or plot. I just let the characters go where they need to go and talk to who they need to talk to and be who they are and respect that.
Anybody who's ever tried to write a 5-year plan for his or her life respects that, because you can plan all you want,
you
and that does not mean your life will turn
exactly.
out the way you think it should.
Exactly. I've had characters. There's a character in the first book called Caleb, and he was, in my mind, the villain of the book, and he became so much more sympathetic. And he did bad things in the book, but he turned out much more sympathetic than I meant him to. And it was very frustrating to me at first. And then I thought, no, this is okay. This is who he is. I don't get to choose.
Sharon Gamble with novelist Sherry Wood Emmons. You can learn more about Sherry's new novel, The Sometimes Daughter, at sherrywoodemmons.com. Again, Sherry, and S-H-E-R-R-I, Wood Emmons, EMMONS.com. And you can also read about her other work there as well.
Travis?
Yes, Sharon.
I sure hope we have some baking events on our calendar today. Do you know why?
Bacon or baking?
Baking. Oh, well, bacon's always
welcome. If
there
was a bacon event, that sounds great. No, I don't know why you want to have a baking event
you know,
on our calendar.
Certain members of the vast Art of the Matter staff, comprising two people,
yes.
have birthdays in June.
We do have some birthdays coming up. I see some bacon events so that people can prepare to bake cakes and cookies.
I love it.
All sorts of other tributes.
You know, we've been trying this for, 12, 13 years.
Yet.
It hasn't worked yet, but there's a first time for everything.
That's right.
Meanwhile, we have some things for you to do that really are artistic on our calendar. We call
What Will We Do? Yes, and maybe they do involve bacon. hey, just a heads up that next weekend on Saturday, June 9th, from noon until 8 p.m., is the Indiana Handicraft Exchange event. This is always a really fun event that takes place at the Harrison Center. It's with a whole bunch of handicraft artists who are creating the work and doing a big exchange. It's actually a part of the whole independent music and art festival. Sharon, that is a terrific event that the Harrison throws each and every year. And tons of artists and bands and all types of stuff at their location at 16th and Delaware.
Fantastic. Hey, if you are a young professional, roughly between the ages of 21 and 40, and you're looking to do a little bit more, maybe get out in the world a little bit more, check out The Scene. It's the YPs group at the Center for the Performing Arts, and they've just started opening up registration for joining for the new season. There's an annual membership fee, very modest, but it includes a free ticket to a performance, exclusive ticket rates all season long, volunteer opportunities, and special events, including cool receptions, monthly mixers, etc., etc. Some of the performances coming up that Scene members will get special perks at include July 27th, Leanne Rimes. That includes a pre-party. October 20th, Savion Glover, and a pre-show cocktail hour, plus an after-party, and many, many more. You can find out more at the Center for the Performing Arts.org.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of the Center for the Performing Arts, their individual tickets, single tickets, are on sale now, Sharon, for all their summer shows, including the B-52s on August 26th
Ooh.
And Sheryl Crow on September 6th. Those are going to be absolutely terrific shows. Can't wait for that. Also, this is a fun one. Hugh Laurie.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
for
he's
going
to be with his
Copper Bottom Band.
Yeah, on August 22nd. That should be a ton of fun, too. So you can get single tickets for all those
now. Hugh Laurie, I think the final episode of House aired a couple of weeks ago.
That's
He's gotten into American jazz and blues music, blues in particular.
Yeah, he had to finish up House so he could come to Carmel.
Is that how it
works?
That's
exactly how it works.
I love that. Hey, on the horizon, coming up very soon, you might want to check these out before tickets are no longer available. The Indianapolis Early Music Festival, June 22nd through July 15th. The first weekend includes Baroque violinist Ingrid Matthews with Seattle Baroque. And there's a great summer season of early music on tap. This is what used to be called the Festival Music Society season. It's now Indianapolis Early Music Festival, and you can find out more online.
So, if you're wondering...
I was just wondering.
If you're wondering what all those watercolors are doing inside the One America building, well, I'll tell you, because the Watercolor Society of Indiana's member show has been hung in the atrium at the One America building downtown, and it opens on June 2nd, this weekend, and it runs through June 23rd, and all the paintings are done in water-based medium and are framed and available for purchase. And it's a very cool sample of some great work by some amateur and professional artists from all across the state, all at the One America building.
You know, it's open season on art fairs and festivals. You cannot, I'm going to use the phrase, swing a cat without running into one. I know, don't do that to your cats, please. The 14th annual Brown County Studio and Garden Tour is coming up the weekend of June 22nd through the 24th. Hours are Friday 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 6, Sunday 10 to 5. And you can, of course, find out more online at browncountystudiotour.com. But this includes a dozen or more artists and garden tours. And, of course, there are all the other reasons that you might visit Nashville and Brown County, all the great artisan shops and restaurants and beautiful scenery between Indianapolis and there. So studio and garden tour in Brown County, June 22nd through the 24th, a little bit of a road trip.
That'll be great. That'll be a really nice nice way to spend the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, something else to consider, possibly for a road trip, depending on where you live, is going up to Connor Prairie on June 15th for their craft beer event, Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of other great reasons to go up to Connor Prairie, of course, and check out Prairie Town and the balloon and the Civil War journey. But but this this unique craft beer event is going to be featuring live local breweries, including, of course, Fat 12 and Found Square Brewery and Sun King and Three Pints in Upland. And there's going to be presentations there and demonstrations and special adventures, including a sunset flight of the 1859 balloon voyage.
Ooh.
So that is all on June 15th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And I do suggest you get tickets ahead of time. There's also designated driver tickets as well. Information at ConnorPrairie.org.
There's probably some beer style that were around in 1836.
Well, of course, it's historic.
Uh-huh, there you go. One more road trip. This one is taking you to Southeast Indiana. The Sisters of St. Benedict of Ferdinand, Indiana, are having a summer social on Saturday, July 7th from 8... let me try that again. Saturday, July 7th from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. And you can find out more about the 145th anniversary of the Sisters of St. Benedict. A lot of great history, and you can learn more and enjoy the arts and enjoy some great things to eat as well.
Hey, I know you've heard me talk often about croquet. Well, the croquet tournament at the Benjamin Harrison site is coming up on June 16th. But this year, there's something different. In addition to the kids croquet in the morning and then the actual tournament in the afternoon, they're having an event called Swing is King, which is a mixer in the evening that includes the opportunity to watch the tournament, as well as lots of drinks and entertainment. And it's a much more sort of social event.
A little less competitive.
Much less competitive. So if you would like to check out and see what is all this croquet stuff about Travis is always talking about, this is a great way to do it. It is the Swing is King Mixer. It starts at 5 p.m. It is $35 per person, but there's a lot of great stuff included. And you can get more information, of course, at the President Benjamin Harrison site. And that will be a lot of fun. I'll be there, of course.
A man must have a sport.
That's right.
And croquet is a very elegant, traditional sport to have. Coming up now for something completely different, I don't think there are any croquet mallets, but there might be wire hangers.
What?
Dearest, the Mommy musical. This is Ron Spencer's new gig. Latest product over at Theater on the Square. It opens June 15th and runs through Bastille Day. I don't think there's any connection there. But book, music, and lyrics by Ron Spencer, orchestrations, and additional music by Roger Smith. If you've met Ron Spencer, you probably know his love for the great classic film heroines, and I'm sure that's where Dearest the Mommy musical comes from. Should be a lot of campy, good fun. Again, opening at Theater on the Square June 15th.
Something else opening June 15th, the Heron School of Art and Design's June Gallery Show. This is really cool. It's called Indie Collects, and it basically is looking at different art collectors within the city, including featuring work from the personal collections of Jeremy Ephraimson, Julie and David Eskenazi, Sydney and Lois Eskenazi, the Freelanders, Dorit and Gerald Paul, Steve Russell, Deborah Simon. Work from all of their personal collections are going to be included. It opens on June 15th from 5 until 8 p.m. and runs through July 26th. It's a really interesting way to see what do people collect in town.
Love that.
Yeah.
The Midwest School of Voice has a special event on June 24th. They're hosting Jenny DeVoe in a salon concert and master class. She's going to sing her original music in the intimate second floor lounge, talk about her career path, and offer a photo opportunity with attendees. So you can check that out. Just Google Jenny DeVoe, Midwest School of Voice. And again, that's coming up on June 24th.
And just one more reminder about the 11th Annual Independent Music and Art Festival taking place at the Harrison Center next Saturday, June 9th. That does go from noon to 8 p.m. It is free, and there are bands playing all day, including Rusty Redenbacher, The Lord of Yum Yum, Hero Jr., Native Son, Ranger, The Goodnight Fields. Plus, again, that's when the Indie Handicraft Exchange, the DIY Contemporary Craft Fair, is taking place with 100 vendors and lots of other great art that will, including work by Loeb and Hamilton, who does the cool stuff with the vinyl records, and of course there'll be food trucks there. Lots of fun taking place from noon until 8 p.m. The annual Independent Music and Art Festival at the Harrison Center, 16th and Delaware.
The American Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences wants to give away money. In particular, they're looking to make grants to a variety of film festivals, including and sort of focusing on those that make festival events more accessible to the general public, give screening access to minority and less visible filmmakers, and bring the public into contact with filmmakers. So if you've been saying to your friends and colleagues, I really need to start a film festival.
Okay,
see, I'm just saying. You want to get online and find out about this grant process. Applications must be submitted by June 27th. And you can find out more about that online and get your film festival going.
Very good, very good. Well, we will be back next week with lots more things for you to do and see and hear about and submit to and whatever else on the calendar that we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
In the still of the night, it's too darn hot. But I've got you under my skin, and since I get a kick out of you, don't fence me in night and day. And if you recognize some song titles in that silly sentence, then you just might be a Cole Porter fan too, like Travis DiNicola. He spoke with Dance Kaleidoscope's David Hochoy about their upcoming dance concert, Cole, which celebrates the Indiana composer's music.
David, welcome back to Art of the Matter.
Thank you, Travis. Great to be back.
Good to see you again, and so soon. Actually, we just had you on a little bit ago about Spotlight. Let me ask you first, before we talk about Cole, how did Spotlight go?
Well, I thought it was a really wonderful evening. We had great comments from the audience this year. The acts, the talent, the lineup that we assembled went beautifully, very smoothly, and everybody said it was a great show this year. And good. We raised about $400,000 for the Indiana AIDS Fund, which is really,
that's terrific.
Yeah, we're very proud of that. That's really wonderful.
Well, and that's really what it's all. That's great. And is that close to record? Or
I think it is a record. I think it's a record. That's saying that over the years we've raised $5 million.
Wow, that's really great.
Really wonderful.
Good. Well, thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you for publicizing the event.
And here we are talking about Cole. So I want to ask you, because I am a huge Cole Porter fan.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about when I first was introduced to Cole Porter, and it was long before I actually moved to Indiana and even knew that he was, you know, born here and all that. But what about you? When did you become a Cole Porter fan?
You know, growing up in Trinidad, I didn't know very, very much about Cole Porter. I think the first time I ever heard some of Cole Porter's music was, believe it or not, in the film of Kiss Me, Kate, because, you know, of course, I love musicals.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I'd ever seen it. But then what happened was in college, in grad school, they did a production of Anything Goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I just fell in love with that musical. That's an incredible show.
It is a great show.
And like, there's no bad song, and every single song is fantastic.
I was thinking, for me, it was Can-Can. I was in a community theater production of Can-Can in Erie, Pennsylvania, when I was about 17. And it was funny because the director loved Cole Porter, and he ended up inserting about 5 Cole Porter songs that aren't even in the musical just because he wanted to do them. And so it was a very strange production. But that was kind of my first introduction. And then, you know, I know you remember this, probably about a little over 20 plus years ago, the CD Red Hot and Blue, that was all of the fun sort of alternative contemporary takes on Cole Porter's music. You know, I mean, of course, he had the musical that he did, Red Hot and Blue, I believe back in the 20s. But the CD that I'm talking about, it featured like U2 and David Byrne and Tom Waits and Blondie.
And Annie Lennox.
Yes, yeah.
Well, the thing is that I use some of that in my production.
Well, and that's what I thought. This is some of the music in the production you're using. And so there's two parts to the production.
There's two parts of
right?
the production. The first, there's Act One, which is called Old King Cole. I thought it was a really clever title, Old King Cole. and it really is very, very charming. It's sort of like it's a throwback to, you know, the 30s and 40s. We have original recordings, actually, that go back to the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
We have, for instance, Josephine Baker singing I've Got You Under My Skin. And she sings the first verse in French. And then she sings the second verse in English. It's really fantastic.
And this is, I mean, with like all the scratches and cracks
and all the scratches and cracks
in the old vinyl.
Yeah.
And what a great sound.
And that's the kind of music that I fell in love with. That's what persuaded me to do the piece in the first place, because, you know, I had come to Indianapolis. I'd lived in New York for a long time, and I was very much a snob in terms of music. I only thought like I should use serious classical music. And then one of my board members said, you know, you really should do something to Cole Porter. And I was like, you've got to be joking. But then he started playing this music for me, and I fell in love with all these, you know, these old recordings. They're so charming.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first half of the show is all done to these old recordings, and it's really kind of like a tribute
to yesteryear. It's very nostalgic. It has this very sort of Hollywood, glamoury, glitzy, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, boy meets girl kind of feel to it.
What makes Cole Porter's music and lyrics so good to dance to? I mean, there is, in many of them there are stories, but Dance Kaleidoscope is a modern dance company, and not always associated with, you know, a literal telling of stories in the music. What makes it good for your company to dance?
Well, Cole Porter was a genius in terms of putting lyrics and music together. I think I was saying last night that not until Stephen Sondheim again came along did we have a songwriter who could combine both music and lyrics in such a wonderful, wonderful way.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, the lyrics are very clever, and the lyrics fit the music in an incredible way. His music is very interesting rhythms to it. Like,
mm-hmm.
for instance, Anything Goes has very interesting rhythms. Even Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love has interesting rhythms to it. It's never, ever square. It's never 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's always 1
sure.
and 2 and 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, so it's that's why it's always very, very.
So it gives your dancers a lot to work with.
It does. It gives me a lot of material to work with. The second part of the show is called Cole Soul, S-O-U-L, and my whole idea of it was, and actually the springboard for it was this wonderful CD called Red Hot and Blue, which you told our listeners about, because. What this CD does is that it takes Cole Porter's music and it completely does them in a very modern way. And the second act opens with David Byrne's version of Don't Fence Me In,
which I love.
I love it. And I didn't even know it was, first of all, I didn't even know it was a Cole Porter song.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very, you know, in your face, blasting away. And it's that gave me the inspiration to do a second act where... the Cole Porter songs are interpreted in a very different way for a different kind of era.
Yeah.
So it's really about, the second act is really about how the American dream kind of we're a little more disillusioned and we're a little tougher. It's a grittier world. And so, but the Cole Porter songs still have some meaning for us.
You mentioned Annie Lennox, and every time we say goodbye she covers. And
brilliant.
Just a beautiful, beautiful version.
Beautiful version of it.
It's funny about Don't Fence Me In, because I think I did not realize that was a Cole Porter song until I'd heard the cover by David Byrne as well. Is the style of dance, I mean, it sounds like the theme is different.
The style is different,
but
too.
Is the style dance?
The style is very different. It's it's much more hard-hitting. And I try to deal with some social issues. For instance, I deal with when I was choreographed in the 90s, it was the homeless was a very, very big problem, and they still are a big problem for us. And I do a piece about the homeless to Miss Otis Regret, sung by Bette Midler.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
Travis,
you know the history of that song, right? It's such an incredible.
Tell us, yeah.
Well, Miss Otis Regrets, She's Unable to Lunch Today, is a wonderful song. But it was really, the way it came about was because of a bet that Cole Porter had with one of his rival songwriters. It was either Irving Berlin, I think, or George Gershwin. It may have been Irving Berlin, who said, Cole, I'm going to make you a bet that you cannot write a song to a lyric I give you. And Cole said, okay, I'll take you up on that bet. And so Irving Berlin said, all right, write a song to this. Miss Otis Regrets, She's Unable to Lunch Today. And so Cole Porter came up with this fantastic song.
Huh.
It's really, really amazing.
And
of course, Bette Midler's rendition of it is just brilliant.
Well, and again, the lyrics are so clever in all of his work, in Cole Porter's work. I was really thrilled that you are putting this concert on over June 7th through the 10th, because June 9th is Cole Porter's birthday.
It is.
Which
June
also happens to be my birthday, too, which is the only reason I know that. But, and you know, no connection there. But,
you'll have to come to the theater so we can sing happy birthday to you, to Travis, and to Cole.
That'd be very fun. and this is being performed at the IRT?
IRT, yes.
Which is your home for performance.
And it's on the main stage, and you can get tickets by calling 635-5252.
Now, I saw something that Brent Marty was also involved. Is that right?
Brent, no. He's not involved in our production, but he was involved in... we did a Conversations with David last night at the History Center, and he came and he played some Cole Porter songs for us, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Brent is so brilliant. He's a brilliant, brilliant stylist, and it was wonderful to hear the Cole Porter songs done live by a guy who can sing them and play them on the piano. And it's, you know, all of the lyrics came through and all of the heart came through. It was really beautiful.
Do you have a favorite Cole Porter song?
You know, I can't say that I do have a favorite Cole Porter song. A lot of them are wonderful. I love Every Time We Say Goodbye. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really beautiful. I love Begin the Begin because I think the kind of the South American feel to it, the tango.
Great music
is
in
wonderful.
That. Yeah.
I love You're the Top. I love Anything Goes. I love It's the Lovely. I love I love everything.
Well, fun. It sounds like it's just going to be a terrific show, great way to close out your season.
It's a wonderful way. And you know what's really great is that the younger generation of dancers that is now doing this piece, they're having a great deal of fun with it. And I think it'll be interesting for us to see this younger generation do this piece again. Because it was first choreographed in 1997.
Right. And now, and you've revived it at least once since
then? We revived the entire thing once in 2002.
Okay.
But this is, so it's the first time in 10 years that we're reviving the whole thing.
Travis DiNicola with Dance Kaleidoscope's David Hochoy. DK's dance concert, Cole, runs from June 7th through the 10th at the IRT. For more information, visit dancekal.org. That's dancekal.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I'll get a preview of the Ensemble Music Society's new season.
I'll check out what's going on at this year's Talbot Street Art Fair.
And I'll chat with the American Pianists Association's Joel Harrison. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.